The following podcast is a work of fiction. All characters are the creation of Peter Williams. Any resemblance to someone living or dead is purely coincidental. Thank you.
As Maggie searches for Jonah, Jonah finds himself in a sticky predicament. Are those sirens really for the fire? As he wraps the poor, soaked Arista in his cloak and sprints off into the deep woods. Realizing his surroundings, he heads someplace he's been before, giving him a whimsical feeling? I doubt it. Too many scars. But as you will see on this Tentacle Tuesday, there are plenty of echoes of the distant past. Anyway, it is time for me to remind you that this podcast may contain images of graphic violence, child endangerment. Right, Jonah? I'm so mean. And of course, some naughty, salty language. Now, let's dim the lights, grab some popcorn and our favorite tentacle as we dive into Chapter 4, Echoes.
Jonah looked at the girl lying in the mud. Her silver hair gleamed in the firelight, giving it a strange, moonlit glow. The rain had slowed, and the strange man with the spear had vanished after she consumed the fire demon. Consumed. Or looked as if she consumed it. She really like him? A demon eater? He looked back at the smoldering ruins of the cottage. If anyone had been inside, they would not have survived the blaze. Still, he would have the gruesome detail of searching for what would have been this girl's parents. She shivered and coughed, taking off his trench coat and wrapping it around her. She must be soaked to the bone, he thought. But he couldn't do anything about that yet. Especially not here. If the enemy returns, she'll be defenseless. No, they'd have to move. And fast. Again, Jonah looked back at the smoldering ruins. He didn't have time for an intensive search, and he could already hear the sirens approaching. Explaining things could be messy. He had learned that over the years, and did his best to avoid speaking with people. The only person he could talk to was currently stuck outside of time. Fine. I'm gonna have to carry you someplace safe, he said. The girl nodded, giving him the okay. Lifting her up, he scanned the horizon. Without Sam or a Solomon Gate, he wouldn't be able to teleport her to another place. That meant he could be tracked. It was the first time he was truly envious of Jack Stevens' faux angel powers. But being jealous over wings that he didn't have wouldn't move this girl, and that was his top priority. Spying an old familiar place, he took a deep breath and sprinted off into the heart of the woods. He sprinted at top speed. It would appear inhuman to most as he covered miles in seconds as he drew on the demonic energy stored inside his body. Cutting between the trees, navigating the flooded streams and ponds till finally spotting the low-lying hills above Rift. Back here, the rocky caves where Mr. Alistair had treated him nearly 30 years ago. Like Mr. Alistair had done with him, he climbed up from the riverbank towards a small round cave. As he traveled, he could almost feel himself looking back. The past was all around him, as if an echo of himself was being reflected in the here and now. Mentally planning things out, he knew he'd need to light a fire and... Oh no. He looked at the sleeping girl in his cloak. That wouldn't work. Shoot. Her wet things. He'd crossed that bridge when they got to it. Right now, he needed to get her someplace safe and warm. Finally reaching the cave, he laid the girl down on a straw mat. Ancient ash covering the floor from that night. Quickly venturing out, he gathered some wet wood and piled it inside the stone circle. Then, once again, drawing on the energy stored inside him, he focused his left hand until finally flames poured out, licking the wood until a strong blaze took hold. Now, he thought to himself, here's where things get tricky. He would have to undress her before she caught her death. Why me? He grumbled out loud. Why can't Sam be here, or Caitlin, or even Maggie? Is this no proper way for me to be doing this? Rolling the girl out of his cloak and hanging it near the fire before kneeling down again next to her. please wake up, he muttered, even just for a few minutes. But she remained in the deep sleep. Letting out a huge sigh, he shakily reached out towards the buttons on her shirt. Darn it, he said, biting his lip. Suddenly a voice broke the silence as it chided him.
Tsk, tsk, tsk. Well, what's going on here? Maggie said with her usual bite.
Maggie, he said, spinning around, turning beet red.
It's not. Yes, I can see quite well what's going on, Maggie continued.
Oh, stop. I can't leave her soaked to the bone, she'll...
It was then he realized she was kidding.
But there was something else.
Max? Go. I'll undress her and hang her clothes.
Then tossing him a large blanket,
Big Red sends his regards.
Mr. Alistair?
How? We'll talk after I get her out of these wet things and wrap her up in one of my cloaks. Now get out!
I'm going! Sheesh! Jonah left and gave Maggie and the girl a few minutes before returning and getting changed himself. As the girl slept, he disrobed. Maggie set up a small kettle over the fire and started a hot pot of soup. Now wrapped in a heavy wool blanket, Jonah returned and sat by the fire on a rock. Mags had gone quiet. She looked sad, as if her old wounds were creating a heavy sense of remorse.
Are you okay? I met him, you know.
Her tone was melancholy. Mr. Alistair?
No, him. The word, she replied. He was warm, gentle.
Giving Jonah a tearful look, the look of someone who desperately needed a hug, Maggie continued.
He said he was sorry. Why? It's not his fault I'm this way. And if it wasn't for his sacrifice...
I think it's because he hurts for all of us. His love is tied to us and our suffering.
But Jonah, do I deserve that?
She pleaded. Pulling her in closer and giving her that hug, he answers.
Did Mr. Alistair?
Yet he sent someone to pull him out of the darkness. Maggie looked towards the sleeping girl on the straw mat. This was that girl that had sought out Mr. Alistair. This was that girl that greeted her at the garden. This was the girl who existed outside of time. Outside of time until now. Why she had entered into the human world was beyond her. It had something to do with the word. But what? Maggie turned back and tearfully looked at Jonah. She wondered if he knew. Then she remembered why she had come.
I also came bearing news.
He knew. The second she spoke those words to him, he knew.
Mom?
She nodded, tears streaming down her face.
How?
When?
Uriel believes it was the cult.
The cult of Igatsu?
How?
Stevens drove that beast into the depths of nothingness.
A van was spotted near the house the day she died. It had a picture of a long tentacle reaching out to surround the world.
She handed Jonah the pictures Uriel had handed her.
Tentacle World Order?
He questioned, raising an eyebrow.
Yes.
They're not hiding it, are they?
That's what I said. Uriel said that sometimes hiding in plain sight made it harder to notice things.
True enough, he replied. He himself had walked in plain sight among all of humanity. It was only these last 3 years that he had pulled back, a sense of urgency in finding. The girl on the mat stretched, yawned, and then looked at them.
How are you feeling?
Jonah asked.
Hungry,
she responded. Then noticing her outfit and the hung clothing, she turned red with embarrassment.
Don't worry,
Maggie stepped in.
I took care of that. Thank you,
she peeped.
Where are we?
In a cave near Rift, Jonah said, while stoking the fire. Then grabbing a cup, he scooped out some soup and handed it to her.
I know you.
She said, looking at Jonah's amber-set eyes.
What do you remember?
He asked. Her head began to hurt, and she placed the soup down and put her hands to her head.
Are you okay?
Jonah asked in a panic.
Fire,
she replied.
Something monstrous in the fire.
Then what? Maggie asked.
Pain.
Pain?
they said together.
As if everything in my heart and my head exploded,
she replied. Her eyes flashed momentarily.
You! I was looking for you!
Jonas shook his head.
I think you have it.
But the girl was now standing and walking towards him. She staggered and stumbled, like someone that wasn't used to her body.
Hey, easy.
You still need the rest and, more importantly, eat, Jonah chastised her. He helped her back up to the straw, and she obediently sat and ate. Jonah turned back towards Maggie.
I know it's a lot to ask, but I'm really going to need you to stick around for a bit.
Maggie nodded in agreement.
What are your plans in regards to Mom?
Jonah took a deep breath. The news of his mom's death still hadn't quite hit home. He stirred the fire before grabbing himself a bowl of soup.
A funeral would be a trap, but how?
You're right, and with it being holy ground, the cult shouldn't be able to make a move.
So again, how?
But why else would they murder Mom? Just to send a message?
No, it had to be something more.
Maggie? Jonah turned to his old friend. She turned and looked at him. Her eyes were softer somehow, as if this death had triggered some forgotten emotion.
What are you thinking?
She asked, sensing his discomfort.
There's something more to this murder, he replied. I think no funeral or service.
Maggie, furious, stood straight up.
Jonah? Mags, this is an obvious trap. What? So they can get your new apprentice?
She snapped. The words stung, but Jonah let them pass.
No, you.
Her eyes burned hotly at him.
Me? Are you a complete idiot?
No, he responded, starting to pace almost in front of the fire.
They've always wanted you back. They want to punish you, and they know the best way to do it was by killing my mom. So,
Maggie replied, gritting her teeth,
because of me, you won't have a proper service or funeral? Jonah, I don't care what they do. If they come, I'll burn them in ways that will make the way seem preferable.
The ire in her eyes made Jonah back off. Jonah had become Maggie's mom by proxy. Finally, calming down, Maggie did something unexpected. She grabbed him and pulled him in, and she held him. It wasn't that they hadn't hugged before, but up until now, he had always initiated it.
I know,
she said, hiding her face in his chest.
I know you want to protect me. Thank you.
They stayed that way for a few minutes until finally someone clearing their voice shook them back to reality.
Ahem! It was Mikal. Am I interrupting something?
They quickly pulled apart.
No,
they said simultaneously, and Mikal laughed. You're like a couple teenagers getting caught by their parents.
Jealous? Jonah scoffed.
If you really insist, I'll give you a hug, Mikal.
I'll pass, he said with a half smile, and he joined Jonah, Maggie, and Arista around the fire.
Mikal eyed the girl. He could see she had tremendous power.
So, Mikal said, still focusing on Arista, you think a funeral will be a trap?
Yes. With two archangels, you, old Black Feathers there, and this young lady, do you really think they're that stupid?
Maggie nudged Mikal hard in the ribs, and he playfully laughed, saying, ow!
But Jonah's voice remained serious.
Pride, Mikal, Jonah cautioned. Pride begets a fall.
Mikal nodded. Pride, the sin of all those that thought they could do better, that they could do it without him, Aldone, and anything created without his spirit was incomplete and imperfect. This led to the downfall of creation, that very notion of they could do better.
Point taken, he added.
Then what do you plan? He sighed, shrugged, and relented.
I guess we'll hold a funeral.
A funeral. Could it be a trap? How? Oh, with the lunatic writing this thing, you never know. For I am quite certain he has something delectable up his sleeve. As we now prepare to say so long to Joan Hollander. In Chapter 5, The Funeral.